Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at the playbook of Atlantic Research Technologies, or RT. Specifically, their surgical approach to executive search in the very high-stakes Asia-Pacific market.
Right.
And our sources say they actually started in electronics R&D back in 1987. So the first question is, why is that history even relevant?
Well, it's all about the mindset. They approach finding a candidate not like a standard HR task, but like an engineering problem. It demands absolute precision.
Okay, an engineering problem.
Exactly. And that's critical because in APAC, your typical, you know, volume-based recruitment, it just fails. The pool of bilingual executives who are up to international standards is tiny, and they're already working.
So if you're just posting on job boards,
you're basically just hoping for luck.
Right. And this seems to be why they use what they call the direct approach method. They only go after high-performing, passive leaders, people who are already succeeding somewhere else.
It's a very calculated strategy.
It seems like that's the entire hook. You secure talent that isn't even looking.
And the tool they use for that, the mechanism, is something they call intersection analysis.
Intersection analysis.
Yeah, it's this really rigorous framework. It's all about alignment. You're matching the client's actual mission. Like, are you launching a chaotic greenfield operation, or are you trying to navigate a huge Korean chaebol with a candidate's specific career path and their cultural style?
And that's where you start to see their core idea, this harmonization of the global and the local.
That's the goal.
That thinking seems to shift the entire risk calculation. I want to highlight some of the operational parts here. First, the flat fee model.
Mm-hmm.
That immediately removes the financial incentive for the recruiter to inflate salaries, right? It keeps everyone focused on the client's budget.
It totally changes the dynamic.
Yeah.
And critically, they have a 75% success threshold before they even accept a search.
So they're vetting the client just as much as the candidate.
Absolutely. It's risk mitigation. It's insurance against the whole project failing. And it's usually backed by a pretty solid money-back guarantee.
That focus on risk makes sense. But they also run a 247-365 model. Is that just about dealing with time zones?
Not at all. It's about speed. It's about sheer velocity.
Why is that so crucial?
Because the markets in Asia move incredibly fast. And the Western AQs are often, you know, culturally and geographically detached. You simply cannot afford a 12-hour lag just to check a reference.
Especially when you're trying to poach top-tier talent.
You'll lose them.
Let's dig into some regional specifics. The Kyopo strategy they use in South Korea it's fascinating.
It really is.
They recruit foreign nationals of Korean descent, people educated in, say, North America or Australia.
And these bicultural leaders are sent in to bridge that huge trust gap between a Western headquarters and the local Korean teams and suppliers.
That sounds like an incredibly difficult, complex role to fill.
Oh, it's the ultimate harmonization challenge. You're navigating two completely different sets of cultural rules at the same time.
I do have to wonder, though, if you're strictly targeting passive, already successful candidates, doesn't that inherently limit diversity? I mean, doesn't it risk creating a very insular talent pool?
It's a calculated trade-off.
Yeah.
They're making a bet on guaranteed precision, because for these critical roles, the alternative is often total failure.
Okay, so it's a trade-off.
And we see a different kind of precision in Southeast Asia. In Indonesia, for example, they use business model matching.
What's the insight there?
The insight is that a candidate who is successful at a giant, stable, multinational is probably the worst fit for a mid-sized company's chaotic first entry into the market.
So you look for someone who has already built something similar.
Exactly. For a direct competitor or a near competitor. And that's tied to what they call their industrial food chain intelligence.
Which is mapping the whole ecosystem.
The whole thing. Component makers, yeah. System integrators, end users. So if you're looking at semiconductors in Taiwan or Korea, they focus on the Fab and Fables ecosystems to find the candidate with the most valuable network.
With all that competitive intel, confidentiality must be paramount.
It's everything, especially when you're trying to attract people who are already employed. And what's interesting is their data policy. All the candidate data is stored on secure U.S. computers. It is not accessible online.
Which provides a level of confidentiality that these top executives demand.
It's a huge selling point.
And on the ethics front, our sources are clear they have a global non-discrimination policy. They'll refuse to work with a company that makes discriminatory requests.
Right. The focus is always on non-discriminatory qualifications and, you know, actual market familiarity.
So when you boil it all down for the listener, RRT's value proposition is this high-precision, risk-mitigated model.
Yeah, the direct approach, that industrial depth, the cultural fluidity, it's all designed for mission-critical roles where, you know, failure just isn't an option.
So they aren't just filling a vacant seat. They're essentially underwriting the success of the entire regional P&L.
That's a good way to put it. And that brings us to the final thought for you to consider. The recurring theme here is always this challenge of harmonization. So when an Asian subsidiary becomes really successful but also really disconnected from global headquarters, what specific kind of bicultural leader is best equipped to bridge that chasm and finally unite the two?
That's the modern challenge of global leadership right there.